With our guest this hour, Mitch Horowitz, as we talk about the occult, we're going to talk about superstitions as well when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, Mitch Horowitz with us. Mitch, let's talk a little bit about superstitions. How many have you dabbled in?
Oh, gosh, there are hundreds of superstitions, and I pay attention to a lot of them. I kind of like superstitions because I feel they tie us to our ancient ancestors. A lot of these things have very, very deep and ancient roots. And the weird thing is you'll sometimes find that popular superstitions, like a fear of the number 13, for example, can be found among ancient people who were separated by vast distances of time and geography. The ancient Hindus, the ancient Scandinavians were frightened over the number 13, and it probably entered our culture through Christian tradition because Judas Iscariot was regarded as the 13th man at the Last Supper. Now, in Nordic mythology, Loki, the god of evil, is the 13th man at a banquet, and the Hindus also have a tradition where a 13th guest showed up at a banquet and made mischief. Vastly different cultures, all ancient, and they all have a fear of the number 13 and basically the same backstory. So you have to wonder, where did this really come from? This seems to be almost something that's woven into a universal consciousness.
With some of these superstitions, if you believe it enough, will it happen?
That's probably so. You know, there's a power of suggestion in some of this stuff. There's no question about that. And yet it's funny. You'll talk to hyper-rational people who will say, you know, I don't believe in any of this nonsense. But you'll find that they have little superstitions that they hang on to. They might have a certain good luck charm, or they don't want to walk under a ladder. They certainly wouldn't want to break a mirror. And there's plenty of practices that people engage in that are superstitious without knowing it. Now, for example, I grew up in a Jewish household, and when somebody would die in the family and the household was in mourning, we would cover the mirrors. We would put sheets or towels over the mirrors. And I asked my mother, why do we do that? And she said, well, when you're in mourning, you're not supposed to be looking in the mirror, primping and, you know, acting vain, thinking of yourself and that kind of thing. Now, I don't know whether Mom knew it or not, but the fact is that practice has much more chilling and unusual roots. It's a superstition that the departed soul could wander into the mirror and get lost on its way to eternity. Now, Victorian English people believed that the mirror could actually snatch a person's soul. They kept babies and little children away from mirrors because they believed that the image in the mirror was actually your spiritual self. That's an old belief that goes back to ancient Rome, and that if babies or children looked in the mirror, it could stunt their growth or it could steal their souls. So, you know, sometimes these things undergo these transformation where they become part of a traditional religion like Judaism, but they actually have very ancient occult roots. So I like superstition. I feel it ties us to our primordial ancestors.
My grandmother used to tell my mother, Mitch, that if a bird flew into a house, someone was going to die.
Wow.
I mean, and they were just, every time a bird ever even got close to the house, they all freaked out.
It's a scary one. It's a scary one.
They probably died of a heart attack because the bird was flapping around.
Right.
Who knows?
There's probably not a family out there, literally, that doesn't have some superstition woven into its practices, whether people know it or not. You know, people do these things unconsciously, like knock on wood. We used to believe that spirits lived in trees. Many people who are part of the Wiccan or neo-pagan communities continue to believe that, and that's where this idea came from, that there might be evil fairies or spirits lurking about. You knock on the wood, and you knock them out.
What about throwing salt over your shoulder?
You know, I have to admit, I have two young boys. I have them do that. They spill the salt. I tell them to throw the salt over their shoulders. There's an old Roman superstition that spilling your salt is bad luck. Salt is at the root of the word salary. It used to be salt was used as currency by ancient people.
It's believed
that there's an evil spirit over your shoulder that you can blind and chase away if you toss the salt. I don't know whether that's true, but I have my kids do it.
And so many of these other strange, strange myths would be there. I mean, that you just had to be careful doing this, have to be careful doing that. It was almost as if it was a guideline to live, wasn't it?
In some ways, yes. You know, one of the things I like about superstition is they kind of keep us humble. I mean, I like when somebody knocks on wood, because it's a reminder that we're mortal. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. There's a certain humility in it that I think is healthy.
What about not going under a ladder?
What's that all about? Fascinating one. Yeah, there were ancient cultures, including ancient Chinese culture, where condemned people, condemned prisoners, were sometimes hanged from the branch of a tree, and a ladder was leaned up against the tree.
Uh-huh.
And the condemned man was forced to climb the ladder, and it was believed that his ghost could be lurking under the ladder. So if you walked under the ladder, the ghost could cause you mischief. That's probably where that tradition comes from. Here in New York City, when ladders are propped up somewhere, I see people going out of their way to walk around them. People just don't want to do it.
Break a mirror, 7 years bad luck.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
Who comes up with this stuff?
What's that?
Who comes up with this stuff?
Well, that goes back to ancient Rome. The Romans believed that if you looked into a mirror or any kind of reflective object, you were seeing your spiritual self. They also believed that life renewed itself in seven-year cycles, roughly mirroring the cycles of the moon. And so they believed that if you shattered a reflective object, you were somehow shattering your inner self or your astral self, and you would experience 7 years of ill health or discomfort. It goes straight back to ancient Rome.
Are superstitions much like curses, or are they different?
I think they're different. Superstitions, I believe, ultimately, are a way of acknowledging that we live in a mysterious world, and we take it day by day, and we don't know what's around the corner. And it's a way of counting your blessings. It's a way of counting your blessings. For example, when people get married, there's an old tradition that the groom is supposed to carry the bride over the threshold. Well, ancient people believed that there were evil spirits that lurked on the threshold. That's exactly where that tradition comes from. Is that such a bad thing? Does that drive people to do anything irrational? It's a ceremony. It's a way of saying, look, it's a strange world out there. It's a happy occasion. Let's just count our blessings.
It's amazing how many superstitions are out there. I mean, you go online, Mitch, there are hundreds of them.
Yeah, and they really do persist in some unusual ways. If you go into a tall building, look at the elevator bank. You may find that there's no 13th floor. That's an absolute fact. There are many hotels, apartment buildings, casinos that do not have a 13th floor. People just don't want to stay on the 13th floor, and the developer figures, well, why tempt fate? So you'll see this stuff crop up in some unusual places.
I flew back from Vancouver last week, and I was in the 13th row.
Oh,
and
boy.
I saw that and went, you know what? It is not going to get the better of me. I'm
right.
Going for it. And you know what? We landed well.
It was okay.
Yeah.
Right. Well, knock wood, George. I'm knocking wood for you right here.
Here's one.
In my house.
If you say goodbye to a friend on a bridge, you will never see each other again. What's that all about?
There is a superstition that ghosts are not allowed to cross bodies of water. So there's this idea that bodies of water can isolate our inner selves from one another. You know, I mean, some of these things, it's really hard to track where some of these things came from. But some of them have very interesting roots, you know, like the lucky rabbit's foot. Actors are notoriously superstitious. Well, actors used to keep rabbit's feet in their makeup boxes before there were powder puffs. Rabbit's feet used to be used for applying makeup.
Yeah.
Now, that's probably how rabbit's feet, in the modern world at least, came to be seen as a good luck charm. Actors turn everything into a charm or a totem.
What is the superstition of a black cat walking in front of you?
Now, that's very, very interesting. In Europe, in the Middle Ages, the continent was overrun with cats. They had this cat epidemic. There was also a witch craze, of course, going on at that time, which continued for many centuries. It was very often old women who took care of stray cats. And cats, particularly black cats, came to be seen as a familiar or a fellow spirit to women who were accused of witchcraft. There's an old English tradition that when Satan was kicked out of heaven, he fell into a blackberry bush. So the color black came to be associated with Satan in the mind of practitioners of English folklore. So black dogs, black cats were seen as being evil creatures. Cats were seen as a nuisance. Old ladies were sometimes accused of witchcraft. And when the two got associated together, we started to think of black cats as being evil.
If your nose itches, someone's coming to see you. If it's the right nostril, the visitor will be a female. If it's the left, it's a guy.
That's right. Old English tradition. Old English tradition. Now, when I was a little kid, when I was about 8 years old, and my interest was growing in superstition, I went to the library. I took out a book of English folklore, and there was this chart in it. And if you closed your eyes and hovered a pin over the chart, brought down the pin, it would tell you your fortune. So I bring down the pin, and it hits an area of the chart that says a letter. You're going to receive a letter. Honest to God truth, the very next day, I receive a letter. It's from the library telling me I have an overdue book, and that is the truth. Now, I was a kid of 8 or 9 years old. I got very few letters. The next day, a letter arrived from the library I took the book from.
The herb rosemary.
Yeah.
Rosemary planted by the doorstep will keep witches away.
Oh, yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Another, it's an English and a French custom. Rosemary is considered something that will protect you from witches. But the primary custom that you find, particularly among the English, and you'll find this in Africa as well, there is this weird, fascinating belief that witches, vampires, and demons are what we would call obsessive-compulsive. And that if you're being pursued by one of these wicked creatures, you should throw a handful of pebbles or a handful of grain or chicken feed on the ground, because the evil creature will have to stop to count every grain and won't be able to chase you. This is where the African-American wedding tradition comes from, called jumping the broom. In certain African-American weddings, the happy couple will jump over a broom, because there is an old belief that goes back to Africa, Western and Central Africa, similar to the English belief, that if the bride or the groom is a disguised evil spirit, they won't be able to jump over the broom. They will have to stop to count all the bristles in the broom. Now, isn't it interesting that an English folklore has this congruency with African folklore, this idea that there's obsessive-compulsive traits in evil creatures?
My mother used to tell me that her father, my grandfather, whom I did not know that well because he died early for me, that he was obsessed with your shoes. If your shoes were upside down or on the side, he thought that was the worst possible luck.
Very interesting. I've never heard of that particular superstition.
Yeah.
Got me on that one.
He was just petrified if your shoes were... And then apparently you had to spit on the sole and put it back down in its normal state.
Very interesting.
Yeah, very weird old country system. Let's go to some of the calls here for you. Carlos in Carson, California. Welcome to the program, Carlos.
Yes, good evening, folks.
Hi.
I believe that most Freemasons are good people, but at the top of the pyramid of the Freemasons, many are recruited for political purposes, and it ends up in chaos. Look at Mexico. All of Mexico's presidents have been Freemasons, and Mexico's going down the path of destruction. The same here in the United States. A lot of our presidents, including Clinton, Obama, have been, and some others are quasi Freemasonic, such as the Bushes. And look, our country is going down the path of destruction. Look at President Truman. He was a 32nd degree Mason, and he tested the bomb, even though Japan had previously made overtures of peace. So you know, there's something very fishy about why so many politicians are Freemasons and go in and lead countries, and not just politicians, man. You got people like David Rockefeller belonging to the Knights of Malta. David Rockefeller is a very sinister character.
They're all in special clubs, Mitch. How come?
Well, you know, Carlos raises a variety of issues. Let me try to take them one by one. First of all, there have been a lot of American presidents who have been Freemasons. 14 of our presidents have been Freemasons. The last American president who was a fully fledged Freemason was Gerald Ford. Clinton was not a Freemason, but he did belong to a Freemasonic youth group, but he never fully joined the fraternity. And Obama's not a Freemason. He's never had any of those ties. People have asked me if Obama was a member of Prince Hall Masonry, which is an African-American branch of Masonry. It's a wonderful organization. They do a lot of great things, and they have very deep roots. But Obama's not part of any wing of Masonry at all. Now, I think that on the whole, Masonry has been a good influence on the presidency. The reason why you see people in positions of power belonging to Masonry in Latin America and the United States is because, among other things, it's also a networking organization. There are people who join it for business reasons, for political reasons, for reasons of networking. That does go on within Masonry. But I would say if you want to know the ideals of Masonry, look at the mysterious and beautiful iron pyramid on the back of our dollar bill. That's not a symbol directly out of Masonry, but it was inspired by Masonry, and it dates back to our nation's earliest roots. It was commissioned from the Continental Congress by Benjamin Franklin, among others, who was a Freemason, and it expresses this idea that material life is incomplete without the eye of providence, without some sort of higher sense, some universal purpose. And the slogan that surrounds it, the Latin slogan, Annuit Septis Novos Ordo Seclorum, means, roughly translated, God smiles on our new order of the ages. Now, I know people have these creepy associations with New Order and New World Order, but the way it was meant in Masonry is that it was supposed to be a new era of education, awareness, universality, religious understanding. And I think it's a beautiful symbol. I think it captures the ideals of Freemasonry.
I love this one. If your nose itches, you will soon be kissed by a fool.
Ah, yes. That's an old English custom. The English love their superstitions. Yes.
Don't want to be kissed by a fool, that's for sure.
The English had a lot of superstitions associated with days of the week, too. You know, if you kiss a stranger on Tuesday, you could experience danger. If you, you know, catch a cold on Friday, you could catch your death. You know, the English had a superstition for every day of the week.
If you kill a ladybug, bad luck.
Oh, George, what a synchronicity. My younger son, earlier this evening, ran out of the kitchen and said, Dad, there's a ladybug on the ceiling. And I said, that's good luck.
It is good luck. That's right.
So I'll tell him, you know, George, take it from George Norrie. Do not kill a ladybug.
Ladybugs are just neat little insects, aren't they? I mean, how many insects would you allow to crawl all over you? I wouldn't,
right.
But a ladybug, no big deal.
Right. In this house, we do not kill ladybugs.
You know, if a cockroach was crawling on us, you'd throw the thing off.
That we do.
Little ladybug, you just watch it.
That's right.
Why is that?
It's an object of beauty. I don't know where the tradition comes from that killing a ladybug is bad luck. Killing a praying mantis is also considered to be bad luck. I guess we see these creatures as objects of beauty. They're not like the other insects that make us recoil.
I love praying mantis. I think little extraterrestrials. You know, you look at them and their heads turn and they kind of bob and weave and look at you. I mean, there's something special about those things.
It's almost like there's an intelligence there. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean.
Absolutely. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll take more calls. Sorry, I didn't take enough of them this half hour, but I got immersed into these superstitions, and there's so many more. Mitch Horowitz with us, and his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's his name. Also, they've got Origins, the series. Again, they're all linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Oh, we have a television program called Beyond Belief. And for some reason, the interview I did with David Wilcock is the highest-rated program they have. It could be because he came out and danced Gangnam Style. I don't know. But you can take a look at it, watch it, by going to our website, beyondbelief.com. That's beyondbelief.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast. Mitch Horowitz with us. Your calls as well. Mitch, tell us the story of Woodrow Wilson and the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, absolutely wild. There was a ship that vanished in the Bermuda Triangle during his administration. It contained 300 sailors. It was called the USS Cyclops. It absolutely flat out disappeared, and no one knows what happened to it. And the president said, only God and the sea knows what became of them. It was just an absolute mystery, and it's one of the things that started interest in the mysteries of the Bermuda Triangle in this country. It's one of the most enduring naval mysteries in U.S. history, and it remains unsolved.
Okay, back to the calls we go. Let's go east of the Rockies. Tim, St. Mary's, Georgia. You're up with us, Tim. Go ahead.
George Mitch, how are you tonight?
Hi, good, Tim. Hey. Thank you.
All right. Mitch made a comment earlier that I really identified with. When you said you were younger, you had like a calling or an urge to find out what was out there, to find God.
Yes.
And, well, the same thing happened to me. It was, as I was growing up, I had just a, just like, it's like a pulling and halfway knowing, you know. I had an advantage. I grew up in a, went to Christian school for many years where, you know, the word was just indoctrinated in us, you know, all during the week. And then there was church, and we had a chapel every day, and just got immersed in the word. We got a lot of truth and learned a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And when it comes to, you know, and I had friends who, you know, they had callings all their own, and one became a Taoist, others dabbled in the occult, Ouija boards, had bad experiences with Ouija boards, by the way. Mm-hmm. You know, there's light and darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like you're saying about demons, they are real. They do like to fool with man and cause man to look in all different directions. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, as like the world says, I'll believe it when I see it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, God's totally opposite of that. And he says, believe me first. Believe my word and actually do it. And then I will reveal myself to you. I will show you that I'm real. And I will teach you more and more, and I will bring you from glory to glory. And you'll have, you know, greater and greater experiences with me and in life.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I took all that to heart. And, you know, in that Christian school, you know, other people might have been like, yeah, we have to do this. We have to memorize all these scriptures and all. But I really took them to heart and put my heart, body, and soul into it and was actually seeking him. And within a couple of years, I had really learned and been shown a lot. And he opened up the spiritual world to me and let me see things that, you know, other people, if I was to tell them about it, they'd think I was crazy.
Huh. Sure.
Well, Mitch, let me ask you something based on what Tim was saying.
Yeah.
Some people it works for, others it does not. How come?
Well, that's interesting. You know, some people do seem to have a proclivity. They almost seem to have a gift for getting in touch with the unseen. And others, like me, are more hard-headed, and we have to work at it and work at it. But one thing that I heard in what Tim was saying that I always talk about when I come on this program is I'm all for experiments. I want people to experiment and to explore the margins of whatever they're into. But it's very, very important at the same time to also have an ethical teaching at your back, to have an ethical teaching that really speaks to the universal religious impulse, whether it's the Gospels or the Tao Te Ching or the Ethics of the Fathers, which is a book of the Talmud, or the Bhagavad Gita. You must have an ethical teaching at your back, or you're liable to wander off the path. And I think that is absolutely vital for anyone getting started out in spiritual experiment.
Mitch, why do you think there's so much evil out there? It's everywhere.
Well, I I've come to believe over the past couple of years that there is an evil force, and I think that it sneaks into our lives sometimes in very subtle ways. I think it comes out in gossip. I think it comes out when we tell stories about our neighbors or about our coworkers. You know, people are always looking for some wild source of evil, you know, whether it's some secretive organization. But, you know, the truth is I do things all day long that hurt other people, that trample on other people's feelings. There are people who think that they don't have the capacity for evil, but sometime in life they wander into a darkened wood and they find themselves guilty of having done something to hurt people they love that they thought they were never capable of. There are, I think, sometimes influences that enter us, and we have to be really careful of it. I think it's real, and I think it's very important, whatever our belief system, that we dedicate ourselves to an ethical teaching and really try to live by it.
We're going to Kota de Kaza, California. Bob, thanks for calling. You're up with us.
Hey, George. Thanks for taking my call,
sure,
guys.
My pleasure.
I had a couple comments. One is you talked about John Kerry's wife earlier in the segment here. And I just thought it was interesting. He said that she was you know, into seances and different things like that. And also, he's a skull and bones guy. And
yeah, that's,
you know,
correct.
Yeah.
That's correct. Yeah.
So maybe
behind,
you know,
Carrie, yes, he had some New Age beliefs. Yes.
Yeah, one question I had was just, you know, what the connection might be there. And then it's funny that you guys actually just in the last minute or two brought on the evilness in life, because I was talking with another avid Coast to Coast AM fan, and we were talking about one of the shows earlier this week about, you know, are aliens real? Are there Prevy people in the government and, and leadership positions in the country in contact with them already? And we started talking about good and evil and what that meant. And the interesting thing that I thought was, we always came back to, if you have a strong faith in God, then the good versus evil paradigm really doesn't matter, because we kind of all know where this is all going to end. You know, if you're a true Christian, Jesus Christ comes back, and, you know, his people are claimed up to heaven, and, you know, the evil people that chose to do evil their life will not be. So, but interesting paradigm, because I think it all goes together with why, you know, groups like the Skull and Bones groups exist, why they're trying to grab power in the United States, the world. You know, we talk about the Rothschilds a lot and, you know, their power grab in the world and what that means. And, you know, are these people truly evil by heart because their life's dominated by money instead of, you know, the soul and the real feeling parts of life, which I think are, you know, manifested by God. But what's your take on that, you know?
Well, it's interesting. There's a lot of issues there. I tend to believe that within the organizations, like Skull and Bones, for example, it goes person by person. It really goes person by person. And evil can creep into our lives in ways that are much quieter than power grabs or money grabs. You know, as I've gotten older, I've come to feel that gossip is probably one of the worst forms of evil, and we all engage in it. And, you know, humiliating other people or, you know, participating in entertainment like certain kinds of reality TV that showcases the humiliation of other people, there's something in that that really degrades the human spirit. And I have to say, you know, if you had asked me 10 years ago, do I believe in the devil, I would have said, no, you know, I believe the universe is ultimately good. And while I do believe that the universe is ultimately good and that God is ultimate good, as I've gotten older, I do feel there is a negating force. I do feel there is kind of an enemy force, as the ancient Hebrews talked about it. And I think that there's something there to that. But I would encourage people, I have to remind myself, look for it in my own day-to-day activities. Sometimes it doesn't always come in the dramatic ways, but it comes in the small things that we take for granted. Very often in gossip or participating in the humiliation of another person, something like that. Look for it in those day-to-day ways.
Indeed. Let's go next to Sharon in Crane, Missouri. It's your turn, Sharon.
Hello, Mr. Norrie. Hello, Mr. Horowitz.
Hi.
I have a few superstitions. My mother's mother was full-blooded Cherokee, and I know Cherokee, everybody's Cherokee, but honest she was. And one of the superstitions that she had, and this comes from the Appalachians, was that when someone died in the family, if the family kept bees, whether it was in a bee Skype or if it was in a tree, you had to go and tell the bees that the person had died, because if you didn't, then the bees would leave and they wouldn't come back.
That is a true myth. I just saw that.
There was another, if you dropped a dish rag on the floor and if it landed so that it spread out, it meant that you were going to have company coming. And my mom said that my grandmother died when she was 36. Mm. And, she was very young. And she almost predicted her own death. Mm. We had come back from California to see her, and I was just a baby. And my mom said that they saw what my grandmother called was a shooting star go across the sky. And she said, someone's going to die before very long. And within a few months, she was dead.
Isn't that something?
So And my mom said that they would get up sometimes in the morning, and grandma would say, get up, we're going to have company today. And mom said that they lived out in the middle of nowhere. You know, they didn't have a telephone, nothing. There was no way that she could know, but sure as shooting, they'd have company later on in the day.
Remarkable. How does that work, Mitch? Thanks,
Sharon. Well, you know, one of the things that's very interesting and a thread that I hear running through everything that the caller was relating and put very beautifully is that all of this took place at an earlier time in a more rural, more agricultural setting in our country's history. And I think that it probably heightened the senses somewhat when people lived in a somewhat more rural, more nature-based situation. Like, for example, we modern people don't know what darkness is. We have no idea. You know, most of us live in areas where there's never full darkness and there's always LED lights on and lights from different devices, not to mention light pollution from all kinds of buildings. But living in an environment where you hear the sounds of nature, where at night it's really dark, you might be in touch with things that we're not always in touch with in the ordinary walk of day-to-day life. It's not natural that we don't know what full darkness is. And the superstition of talking to the bees, I mean, is wonderful. That's an old English custom, but it also goes back to Greece and Rome, and it involves this idea that there are nature spirits. There are spirits occupying the woods, the trees, the brooks, the creeks. And these are things, of course, that the Native Americans also believed. So it's this very natural impulse that nature is alive. It's pulsating with life. We're part of it. It's part of us. And I think that particular practice recognizes that.
We take your Skype calls, and we're going to go to Jungwon, South Korea. Ben's with us. Hey, Ben, good to have you with us.
Yeah, hi. Hey there.
Hello. Yep.
I got a weird one for you I'd never heard of it before I moved here.
Okay.
If you go to sleep with a fan on, you will die.
Oh, boy.
Jeez.
Ben, I hope that doesn't hold true in this house.
I haven't heard that one.
I have not heard that one.
Thank God for air conditioning.
Yeah. Right. Amen. My wife just had me buy a fan.
Tell me about that, Ben. Where did that myth come from?
I absolutely have no idea. We've got some theories over here that has to do with saving electricity, but I have no idea.
Jeez.
But they really seriously believe it.
And don't forget, you're our correspondent over there in case anything happens.
Right.
Don't worry about it. It's much more easy than people lead you to believe on the news.
That's good. All right, thanks, Ben. That's a bizarre one. You're going to die if you sleep with the fan on?
Yeah. In New York City, you die if you don't have the fan on.
Yeah, that's right. The heat will get to you.
Right. That's a new one.
So you have written about war on witches as well. Tell me about that.
Well, we're seeing an increase of violence around the world against people who are accused of witchcraft.
True.
I began to detect last year an uptick in news stories of violence that was committed all over the world, in Africa, Latin America, and here in the West as well, in London, in New York City, because immigration patterns are such that beliefs are spreading all over the world more quickly than they ever have. And when you have people who harbor old superstitions that witches are dangerous, or that there are certain kinds of people that can be identified as witches and they're responsible for death or sickness or financial loss, and these people get targeted. Now, this happens in poor areas of the third world, but it's starting to happen in the developed world as well, because we're a global culture. Immigration patterns are such that beliefs can't be ascribed to just one part of the world anymore. And this is very dangerous stuff. People are getting killed. People are getting targeted, very often women, very often children. That's a huge problem in Africa, where children are accused of witchcraft, and they get tossed out onto the street, they get abandoned. It's a humanitarian crisis. I wrote an op-ed about it last year in the New York Times. People can pop my name into Google with New York Times and War on Witches, and they'll find it. And I'm very concerned about it. Police in Great Britain are starting to do something about it. They have created a guide for teachers and social workers and other police forces that can tell you how to watch for signs of witchcraft-related abuse. Again, abuse that's getting directed against people, very often women and children, who are accused of witchcraft. It's a rising problem. I want us to start keeping the statistics. I think it should be treated like a hate crime. And the police in London are taking the right steps. I want other police forces to do it, too.
Jason, first-time caller in New York City. Let's squeeze you in here, Jason. Go ahead.
Oh, hey, George. Can you hear me?
Yes, sure can.
First of all, I'm so nervous. It's an honor to speak to you. I'm a long-time listener, and I just wanted to tell you right off the bat that your show helped me when I was homeless in California, and it got me through the long nights, and I continue to listen to this day.
Great, great.
Yeah, but my question is for Mitch. How does all of this affect the unconscious? You know, like you were talking about knocking on wood, and I always have a superstition, like when somebody says something like, oh, your house is going to burn down, or this or that, like if they say something bad or negative, like I'm like, no, knock on wood, and I'll knock on the wood like I do it all the time. Because to me, it has an effect on the unconscious that you reverse the energy vibration. And when somebody speaks something, they speak it into existence. So when you knock on wood, you reverse it. And then my other question, and I'll take it off the air, is what is the occult symbolism of rainbows?
Oh, interesting. Wow. Well, there's a couple of different things there. You know, the idea about...
And we've got a minute to go, Mitch.
Sure. Based on sound. I haven't heard that before, but that's an interesting idea. Rainbow, of course, is supposed to be a symbol of God's commitment to us, that we're not going to be wiped out again. And I hope to heaven that's true.
You know, as you look at myths and mythology, do they change at all or they stay the same over the years?
The remarkable thing is the continuity. You find a common mythology among Hindus, Scandinavians, Africans, English. They don't change, and very often these things are very common across cultures, separated by great distances and geography, which makes me think that some of this material emanates from a kind of universal consciousness. The continuity is what's most remarkable.
Mitch, would you give out your websites, please?
Absolutely. It's my name, MitchHorowitz.com. There's videos there, articles there. You can find a link there to get in touch with me. And it's always a pleasure to hear from your listeners, George.
You too, Mitch. Love you. You're one of the good guys. Mitch Horowitz, and again, a couple of his books. One is called One Simple Idea. The other is called Occult America. Now, when we come back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM, guess what? That's right. Open line.